Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-ah! I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us on this last weekend of summer. Autumn begins this coming Thursday. And a salute to the city of Rupert, Idaho. In 2013, they built the Idaho Roll Call Monument to honor all of Idaho's fallen veterans. The flag at the monument is flown at half-staff all year round as a constant reminder of the sacrifices made by Idaho's fallen men and women of the armed services. This is one of only two monuments where they can fly the flag at half-staff all the time. The other is the Trudeau Union Monument in Comfort, Texas. So thanks to Jim Metzger for sharing this. Joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel, whose birthday is this Saturday. Should I sing happy birthday, or should my gift to you be not having to hear my voice?
The latter, Colonel. It's like I don't, you know, you get to a certain age and you can't hear, you know, bad noises anyways.
So then maybe I should sing.
Well, you know, you yell at your kids, you know, turn that music down. I can't hear it anyway, so it doesn't matter.
For listeners who don't know, I was ordered as a cadet at West Point not to sing even at football rallies. So, yeah, I have an interesting voice. Okay, here's what we have for you today. On News and Comments by the Colonel, I'm going to discuss our president's stupid attack on President Trump and his followers. He's trying to divide our nation. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his warrant wisdom. Next, former Marine Lieutenant Colonel Stu Schiller will discuss his book on leadership. It's much about our disastrous abandonment of Afghanistan. Then Chaplain Scott McChrystal will share about abuse of our military chaplains, and we'll learn about the Battle of the Month from General Chris Petty, and of course, we'll review last weekend's Service Academy football games.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on up to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We do welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or by Facebook. Okay, it's time for news and comments by the Colonel. And of course, we're going to start with the news. Take us there, Skip. What's first?
Well, Colonel, on the first of this month, President Joe Biden used a rare primetime speech to the nation to condemn Donald Trump, attack MAGA Republicans, and cautioned that his political opposition threatens American democracy. This speech will be remembered for its backdrop of U.S. Marines as much as for Biden's incendiary rhetoric. Heads ought to roll at the Pentagon for Biden politicizing our military. Notably, two Marines in full dress uniforms stood like statues at parade rest, always in the television picture as bookends for Biden. The Marine Corps band played patriotic music at what turned out to be a political event to motivate Democrats by calling names. Biden used the occasion to tell his audience, quote, "But as I stand here tonight, equality and democracy are under assault," unquote. There is something terribly wrong with this picture. The Marines, props and musicians, were part of Biden's political theater, which violates the law. No doubt Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, a retired Army four-star general, and the current chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, knew beforehand about the political nature of the speech, thanks to administration officials who teased it as an extension of Biden's soul of the nation message given in 2017.
This use of Marines is a total abuse of our military, but in a different way, so was the stupid abandonment of Afghanistan that Austin and Milley facilitated. At the risk of sounding political, our nation was a much happier, safer, and more affordable place to live 2 years ago than it is now.
According to a new poll from The Economist / YouGov, 29% of Americans refuse to receive a COVID-19 vaccine, despite the Biden administration and many employers implementing a de facto mandate in an attempt to get all Americans to accept the highly controversial injection. The poll asked participants whether they had not received any COVID-19 vaccination shots or they had received at least one shot of any manufacturer's COVID-19 vaccine. The percentage of Americans that answered in the affirmative was 71%. The political affiliations of the respondents are telling, with the most likely group to refuse the vaccine being independents, of which 39% remained unvaccinated. Independents were followed by Republicans, who declined to be vaccinated at a rate of 35%. And a surprising 14% of Democrats ignored the orders of their party leaders and public health officials, deciding against being vaccinated against COVID-19. The poll also shows that slightly more women preferred to retain their unvaccinated status, with 31% remaining unvaccinated, while men turned down the shot at 29%. These results come after a monumental effort by the Biden administration to coerce all Americans to receive what has been euphemistically called the jab.
People who are in leadership positions who don't admit it when they make mistakes may be in leadership positions, but they're not leaders. It's clear that the jab doesn't keep you from either getting or giving COVID. We're not sure how much good it does or how much damage it does to people, but our understrength military is still running out good people who don't want it. This all makes zero sense.
And the war in Ukraine has taken another turn. Earlier this month, Ukraine launched its long-awaited counteroffensive against Russian positions in the south. It also reclaimed territory in the northeast. We announced an additional $2.8 billion in aid to Ukraine and its neighbors, including $675 million in munitions, vehicles, and field equipment. The finance ministers of the G7 agreed to a price cap on Russian oil. UN Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield condemned Russia's barbaric filtration operations, whereby Ukrainian civilians are searched, interrogated, and marked for detention or population transfer. Vladimir Putin threatened to escalate the conflict. On September 2nd, Gazprom shut down the Nord Stream 1 gas pipeline to Europe. On September 7th, Putin warned that he might ban oil and gas exports to Europe altogether. Then he said he might cancel a deal that allows Ukrainian wheat exports to transit the Black Sea. His indiscriminate shelling of the nuclear plant turns nearby residents into hostages. Quote, "We haven't lost anything and we won't lose anything," the Ukrainian chief warned, that a limited nuclear war between Russia and the West, initiated by Russia, cannot be discounted, a scenario with grave global implications.
This war is going to go on for a while. Europe should be giving Ukraine the weapons they need to win the war, not just stay in the war. Russian leadership is clearly of evil intent. Why should they stop or not go nuclear? Why should they not? That's a question we need to be prepared to decide what we're going to do if they do it.
India and Japan will be holding more military drills to deepen ties. They are bolstering their militaries to tackle what they see as increased security threats, including from neighboring China.
This is a smart move by both nations. China is a serious threat to each of them, and Russia's a lesser threat. Good job, India and China.
It's deja vu all over again as communist China looks to establish a naval base in increasingly communist Nicaragua, just like the Soviets did in the 1980s. But in one area, it's not just a similarity between the two eras and superpowers, because it's Nicaragua today, the same exact Marxist dictator in sunglasses is in charge again 40 years later. Under the leadership of leftist despot Daniel Ortega, Nicaragua severed diplomatic relations with Taiwan last year in favor of new ties with China's communist regime. Nicaragua also seized a Taiwanese embassy in Managua and transferred it to China in December. It then signed a memorandum of understanding to join China's latest imperial ploy, its Belt and Road Initiative, in January. As the Washington Examiner notes, the BRI has been denounced by U.S. officials for years as a predatory lending scheme designed to allow Beijing to buy an empire. But the biggest concern for our military planners, according to Taiwan's leaders, would be Beijing's hopes to create a naval outpost on America's soft underbelly.
As I've said many times before, China is at war with us now. We need to cut China out of our economy. We need to stop buying anything made in China. We need to get them out of our universities. We need Washington to wake up and fight this enemy. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well run and on the right path. Politics and politicians can be confusing, but we can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a vet, in getting involved and getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. Check CV4A.org. That's CV4A.org. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Front Lines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel and we'll enjoy some warrant wisdom. Then we'll discuss the Afghanistan disaster with Colonel Stu Schiller. At ease, troops, take a break.
Fellow Americans, we need your help. PatriotFoods.com, we are fighting for the American farmer. U.S. only fruits and vegetables from your soil. Go to PatriotFoods.com Use your promo code FREEDOM and you get 10% off today. Support your U.S. farmer. Promo code FREEDOM, 10% off. Thank you so much.
It's great food. I eat it. This is Colonel Danny Gillum, PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coria with your home defense tip of the week. According to the U.S. Department of Justice, your front door is the number one preferred entry point for home invaders. On average, it takes 5 seconds to break down your solid steel security door. To prevent this, reinforce your door frame by doubling the 2x4s and by using longer, case-hardened screws to attach the hinges to the door frame. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit HomeDefenseShow.com.
Nearly 30% of veterans have disabilities caused by military service. At Berry Law, we fight to make sure that every veteran receives full compensation for their injuries. Our team of attorneys, veterans, and former VA employees have helped veterans recover over $100 million in back pay from inadequate VA decisions. For a free consultation, call 888-883-2483.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. It's 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation and listening to the front lines of freedom all across America. Troops, did you know that American farmers are going out of business because folks are buying foreign food? It's not good for our nation's security if we can't feed ourselves. We need to maintain our food independence by buying food grown in America. Patriot Foods is not emergency food. It's food produced by our farmers. I love it. Use the promo code FREEDOM and save 10%. Check PatriotFoods.com. That's PatriotFoods.com. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. Troops, if you've been listening to me very much, you know that I'm very concerned about the way the current administration is taking our nation into both economic and bureaucratic disaster. Our military leadership seems unable to stand up for what is right for our nation when told to do something that is clearly wrong and evil, like abandoning people and military supplies in Afghanistan. I would have guessed until now that I could never be more upset, but I was wrong. Since I clearly think that President Biden is a total disaster, does that mean I'm totally pro-Trump? Well, I disagree with perhaps a fourth of what I've heard the former president say since he's left office, and I don't like some of the other things he said. I guess I agree with about half of what I've heard him say. On the other hand, I fully support about 95% of the things he did when he was president. This from a secure southern border, to gas prices, to pushing European nations to spend more of their own money to defend themselves, and much, much, much more. You know, my mom told me when I was growing up, your actions speak so loud I can't hear what you're saying. By that standard, I am pro-Trump. I do admire other leaders too, but Trump's a good man. So I guess that on Thursday, September 1st, when President Biden stood at a podium in front of two U.S. Marines with that ominous red light at the Independence National Historical Park in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and declared that, quote, MAGA Republicans and MAGA forces are a threat to the very soul of this nation. He was talking about me and many of my friends. To make an understatement, that really annoyed me. Now let's discuss why that statement, which I do believe he meant and will say again, is a serious threat to our nation, especially to our military. Our nation has always relied on good patriotic Americans joining. Sometimes we've had a draft, sometimes not, but the vast majority of people in our military, officer and enlisted, politically tend to be either on the political middle or the right. Except during a draft, there are very few left-leaning people in our military. That, incidentally, is also true in law enforcement. For whatever reason, people who are willing to put their lives on the line for their nation or community tend to be those from the political center or right. This being true, it's reasonable to assume that a pretty good number of those in the military and law enforcement are like me, feeling pretty good about President Trump. And the President of the United States just called us a threat to the very soul of the nation? Should there be anyone in our military, besides all the politically correct generals and admirals, who take the president seriously, then we're about to see some real name-calling, you know, the I hate you kind of arguments among members of our military. And once that happens, we don't have units or teams anymore. We're going to have groups of people who don't get along. I led a rifle platoon of about 35 men in combat in Vietnam during my first tour there. I returned about a year later as the commander of a rifle company with a bit over 100 men in it. Both my platoon and my company had men of all races and ethnicity. We did very well in combat because we were a team. We respected and worked together. We would die for each other. President Biden's comments almost guarantee that this can't happen now. I'm sure platoon and company leaders will do all they can to keep their teams working together, but how do you overcome such words from the president, the commander-in-chief? And it's noteworthy that since the January 6th riot at our Capitol, our military has been very concerned about bias and that sort of thing, but the only thing they have ever done is watch out for white supremacy. You know, critical race theory BS. Virtually all of the violence that I've seen in our country in my lifetime, especially in the last 10 years, has been by Black Lives Matter and Antifa and the like. Why aren't we looking out for that? Oh, and we're providing lots of military equipment to Ukraine and other allies. That's okay, but we're not replacing it in our military stockpiles. Our military doesn't have what it takes now to sustain combat anywhere, and it's getting worse. Why would our generals and admirals let this happen? This can't be an accident. So it's my concerns that President Biden's nonsensical, horrible attack on those who support former President Trump is a move, for whatever reason, to complete the destruction of our military as an effective fighting force. And he's doing it as Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, and others are building up their militaries. Folks, our nation's constitutional republic is in very real danger of being destroyed, replaced by a government that will have central control of everything. Let's at least get our military back as a force for freedom. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. Now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have this week, Roland?
Unless you've been way off the grid the past week or so, Queen Elizabeth II died last Thursday at the age of 96. She was born in 1926, less than 10 years after the end of World War II. And on her 21st birthday, she said in a radio interview that her whole life, quote, whether it be long or short, shall be devoted to your service and the service of our great imperial family, unquote. And as it turns out, it was indeed a long life, as she was the longest reigning British monarch in history. However, did you know that she served in the British Army? One of her more interesting accomplishments happened before she even wore the crown. Elizabeth was the first woman in the royal family to serve as an active duty member of the British Armed Forces. At 16 years old, then Princess Elizabeth had been given the role of, quote, honorary colonel of the Grenadier Guards. But when she turned 18 in 1944, she insisted upon joining the British Army Auxiliary Territory Services, or ATS. She joined the military against the wishes of her father, King George. However, the king ensured that Elizabeth was not given a special rank in the army. She trained as a driver and a mechanic with the rank of second subaltern. 5 months later, she was promoted to junior commander. The media, they dubbed her Princess Auto Mechanic. On Victory Day in Europe in May 1945, Elizabeth was wearing her ATS uniform, and her sister slipped into the crowds on the streets of London to celebrate alongside the crowds. She later said she was terrified of being recognized, so she pulled her uniform cap down well over her eyes. She has said that that was one of the most memorable nights of her entire life. As Queen, Elizabeth was the Colonel-in-Chief of the British Army Regiments and Corps. She was also the last living head of state to have served during World War II. And even in her late 90s, she was known to diagnose and repair faulty engines, just as she was taught to do during the wartime services in the ATS. There's even a picture with her and the Pink Floyd drummer Nick Mason checking the oil on one of his vintage, priceless Ferraris. And you know, if having a Ferrari collection doesn't scream, "I have tons of money," I think getting your oil checked by the Queen of England should do the trick. You know, and I have no idea whether this is true or not, but she was also rumored to carry a 10mm socket in her handbag. In any case, you have to have some respect for the late Queen. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Thanks, Roland. Those are great comments. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss the absence of leadership in our military with Lieutenant Colonel Stu Schiller. Then we'll talk about the abuse of our military chaplains with Chaplain Scott McChrystal. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. You're standing tall with the Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for pull-ups. Start with 40, take a break and do another 30, then stand at ease.
We were instrumental in passing the VA Mission Act, so more veterans could have options and freedom in their health care. We're leading the charge to end America's endless wars, bringing thousands of troops home and stopping trillions of dollars from being wasted. Our key to success? You. We bring your voice to our nation's leaders so we can all have a better future. We are Concerned Veterans for America, the voice of veterans for freedom and prosperity. Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome Stu Scheller. He's a former Marine Lieutenant Colonel and has written a book called Crisis of Command, How We Lost Trust and Confidence in America's Generals and Politicians. And boy, is that true. In the aftermath of our disorganized withdrawal from Afghanistan, Stu Scheller was the Marine who dressed in uniform and posted a video calling for accountability among our military and political leadership. Welcome to the show, Stu. Or should I say welcome aboard? You're still a Marine in your heart, aren't you?
I definitely am still a Marine at heart. Thanks for having me on, Dennis.
Stu, start by telling us about your time in the Marines. I know this is it's in the book, but when and why did you join and what were some of the key positions you held?
I sent in my application in 2004, started officer candidate school in January of 2005. I joined because America was just getting hot and heavy in the Iraq war. It was all over the TV and I wanted to serve my country. So I served 17 years in the Marine Corps, almost 17 years to the day. And I was an infantry officer, served in places like Iraq and Afghanistan, multiple deployments. And I was thrust into the media last year in August when I made a video demanding accountability for the Afghanistan evacuation.
And to make an understatement, I'm a retired Army Lieutenant Colonel, but I've been retired almost 40 years. I was so proud of, one, shocked, and two, proud of what you did, because it needed to be done. And that's one of the reasons why I'm delighted I can have you on the show, because we need people who will stand up and insist on the right thing being done, on people accepting responsibility for their actions. That's really the essence of it, isn't it?
I think so. It's exactly right. We want leaders that can acknowledge failure. I'm not saying there won't be mistakes, but what I expect from my leaders that is when mistakes are made, we can acknowledge them honestly, openly, and then we can learn from it. I mean, service members deserve timely, accurate assessment of failure, and that's why everyone was so frustrated, and that's why my video resonated with so many Americans.
Yes, sir. From reading your book, you ran into leadership issues with people almost from the beginning. Was that sort of a nonstop? Certainly, it wasn't 100% of the time, but it was not shocking to keep running into it because you were used to it by then, I guess. Is that a fair statement? I don't know.
Yeah, I'd say in any bureaucracy, there's good and bad leaders. But because of the way the military is structured, poor leaders continue to get promoted based on their ability to please their bosses. And it's less about performance. And so, yes, when you're young, you assume there's just things you don't know about the system. And then your frustration is a product of ignorance because there's some larger reason that eludes you as to why you're being mistreated. And so you put up with a lot more. But once you get to about 17 years, and the experiences that I had, I just knew at that point that right was right and wrong was wrong. And that's when I decided to push back a little bit.
Well, one of the values that we really need in the people in our military, not just the military, is the value of honesty, dignity, doing the right thing. That takes a heck of a lot of courage. It's cool to talk about. It's sometimes very hard to do. And that is the issue, isn't it?
That is exactly right. For as much as the military talks about moral courage, when it really comes down to having to put their career and all their hard work on the line, very few of them are willing to do it.
You know, one of the things that frustrates me, talking specifically about the abandonment of Afghanistan and all the American citizens and all the top equipment and high-tech, everything that we left, what really bugs me is that nobody said no. The response was, I just obeyed orders. Well, hell, that's what the Gestapo said when they were accused of shooting and killing Jews.
That's right.
There's supposed to be some point where you say, no, this is wrong and I can't play. And I know I'm sort of getting to the
mean, that's the thesis of my book. Just following orders is not good enough. And I expect a lot more from my senior military leaders. Senior military leaders don't get paid to follow orders. They get paid to know when not to follow orders. And there are key moments where we need senior military leaders and senior leaders in the politician ranks to stand up and say, this is wrong before it happens, not jump on the bandwagon and echo something we all know after the fact. In this situation, General McKenzie, the theater commander, he had a moral responsibility to push back, and he just didn't because he was following the orders he was given. And there's a long list of this. I mean, I think Benghazi hasn't been studied enough as a moral courage case study. General Carter Ham had the ability to send military forces, but he followed the orders he was given and allowed Americans to die needlessly. And this keeps playing out because we're not calling these people out and addressing the moral courage shortfalls that seem to be systemic in the military system.
You know, and again, I'm a generation or two ahead of you. I didn't notice that. I didn't see that when I was there. That doesn't mean it wasn't there. It doesn't mean I'm all astute or anything. But I did see, there was one general, a two-star, that I was in his division, and he was horrible. And in Vietnam, I saw him relieved of command. Well, I didn't see him. I was there when he was relieved of command, and another general came in and sent in to straighten out the mess that he'd made.
Yeah,
that was what I thought was supposed to happen everywhere. And it was sort of my opinion from my limited observation that that's what was happening.
Well, in Vietnam, you still had the generation of World War II in the senior ranks, which was just a different cut. I mean, there's a historic case study where President Carter tried to pull American forces out of Korea. And there was a general named Singlob that commanded Korean forces. And he told Carter privately, if you pull American forces out, the Koreans will go to war. All our progress will be lost. It's the exact same situation as Afghanistan. Biden and Carter, a lot of similarities. But then when Carter said, no, we're doing it anyway, Singlob went public with his pushback and resigned. And he was able to change the course of Carter's decision. I mean, that's moral courage. But that's a generation that just doesn't exist in the military anymore.
You know, to an extent, it's a part of American society, not just the military, but in the military, where we've taken an oath to support and defend, that's what we're there for. That's all we're there for. That's huge, and it's horrible that issue's there. But clearly, it's there. How many generals have stepped up in the year since we abandoned Afghanistan and said, "I can't be part of this"?
That's right. Not any.
Yeah, that narrows it down, doesn't it?
It sure does.
And one of our challenges that we Americans face is, how do we fix this? Because it isn't going to be easy, however it's done. And I can't imagine being a senior colonel right now, being considered for promotion to general, and thinking, I want to join these guys.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, you know, I've still got some one-star friends, and one of the one-stars was texting me the other day and telling me that in the General Officer Symposium, so this is a class of one-star generals being spoken to by, you know, senior GS employees and 3 and 4 stars, and the sentiment I got was that the one-stars were pushing back about as hard as they could, not buying into some of the things that were being told. So, but, you know, pushback in a classroom up to a point is something, but, you know, going public and throwing your career on the line is something different. So we'll see.
On the other hand, if that class is there, and it's sensed that they might do that, that's the beginning of the change that we need to see. So that's highly encouraging to me to hear that. And again, I can't point my fingers at any particular individual. Well, maybe the ones at the very top. But if they're not playing, they're not playing. If you won't call a spade, what will you do? I mean, this is wrong behavior. Well, there is quite a lot more to discuss with Stu on this issue, and particularly his book, which we haven't even talked about yet. And he will stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's many I do, well, most days. Then take a break for a stay in the area. Stu and I will be right back.
HelpVet.net is here to help all veterans, active military, and families. HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with their everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, discounted services, or information on retirement benefits, financial resources, and much more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all your needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net. Never forget, never forgotten.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Colonel Stu Schiller about the leadership disaster that our nation is in the middle of. Stu, you went public with your condemnation of the leadership that caused or at least permitted this disaster. Talk to us about what happened then. It's in your book, but everybody knows you got in trouble. How did that manifest?
Well, when I posted the first video, I didn't plan on resigning. I didn't plan on making any other statements. And what I thought would happen, what I would be relieved, but it would be after an investigation, but that the people in my chain of command and my senior leaders would rally around me. And then I'd go on a speaking tour about how we can address these failures, because that's what I would do. A leader of any organization where a mid-level manager speaks out and taps into the sentiment of almost your entire organization, you need to reprimand them, maintain order, get it back in place. But then you have to address the sentiment of that frustration. And they, up to today, still haven't even addressed it, which is just the cowardice. I mean, I honestly didn't expect it to be that bad. And so after I posted that video, the very next day I was relieved, no investigation. And then I started getting ridiculed. I was baited by former senior officers to resign. And they were questioning my honor. And there's just nothing more important to me than my honor. No one was addressing the content of my statements. And so I had a choice. I knew that I was fired. I knew that I was going to go up to Quantico, leave North Carolina, sit in a cubicle, await further legal action. I would have to apologize, back away from my statements, probably get them to convince me that I had some type of mental injury, PTSD. And that's why I was doing it, not because I believed what I was saying. And I realized that I just couldn't live my life like that. I believed fully in what I was saying. And I didn't want to try best case to limp towards retirement. Retirement's not why I do this. I didn't do this to be a career military officer. I did this to leave a better America for my children. And so that moment when I kind of worked through those thoughts, I decided I'm going to resign. I'm going to resign very publicly. And I'm going to apply pressure on them as long as I can to illustrate the hypocrisy and the brokenness of the system.
And you were a battalion commander of a training battalion in the United States when you had done this, because you'd served over there. You were back as a battalion commander, and being a battalion commander marks you as somebody with a real future in the military. That's a rising position. You did that. You posted your statements people heard the videos, saw the stuff, all that stuff. And then all this happened to you. And you ultimately, I think you resigned to get out as opposed to being thrown out.
Yeah, so after the first video, I made a second video where I declared my resignation. I dropped my resignation. But after I made that second video and I dropped my resignation, they weren't going to accept it because they wanted legal action at that point. So I was placed on legal hold. And then it just, it became this series of escalating events because while I was on legal hold, there was really no, it was just lingering. And so I continued to make statements. And so I was moving faster than their legal adjudication process could handle. They'd never been in a situation like this. They couldn't keep me quiet. Their threats weren't working. So ultimately they decided to imprison me and put me in a solitary confinement.
You know, one of the interesting things about this is just about the time you were doing that, a Space Force Lieutenant Colonel, Matt Lohmeyer, got so fed up with the woke stuff that was being forced on his troops and ruining their morale. He fought it all within the schedule, within the system, published a book, submitted it through the Pentagon for approval, and he got thrown out.
Well, so Matt did that shortly before I made my statements, and I studied what happened to Matt. Matt tried to go through all the correct processes and procedures and told everyone about his book, what he was doing, asked permission, then published the book. Then they fired him and then they tried to out him. And so, you know, you look at a case study like that and it's like you can ask all you want. At the end of the day, if you challenge them publicly and they don't like it, they're going to get rid of you. And so, you know, and that actually shaped some of my decisions.
Well, Matt and I are pretty good friends and I admire what he did, and I didn't know that sequence in your relationship with him, but the military certainly is not tolerant of anybody who doesn't lock their heels and say yes. And while to a degree that's important in the military, there's a level at which it is not only not appropriate, it's wildly inappropriate. And that's when we violate integrity and honor and forget about reality. I mean, who'd want to join a unit like that?
I completely agree. I mean, for all the talk about critical thought and wanting to, you know, push back, there is a way to do it tactfully. I got it. But what it comes down to in today's day and age, that if publicly you dissent, you are silenced. And so if you dissent, it has to be done very quietly in-house. But the problem with that is when people dissent quietly in-house, they're silenced and no change comes. And so in through this escalation of like the change isn't happening as we quietly address it. So people start making public comments like, hey, this isn't changing. And then those people get squashed. I mean, it's probably part of the evolution of there has to be change. There's just no doubt about it. And so, you know, I'm probably a cog in the wheel of this system isn't working. Everyone needs to take a look at this, but it hasn't happened yet. And so, you know, there's still a lot of people out there trying to do good things, but right now it's still kind of more of the same.
Unfortunately, you're right. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Colonel Stu Schiller. Stu, sum up some of the key points. What key points would you like our listeners to take away from our talk today?
Well, what I'll say is my book, Crisis of Command, is written to the American people. It's not written to the military. I think a lot of military members will get something out of it, but I want the American people to understand the systemic failures in the military because the military arm of foreign diplomacy shapes all things. So like I know American voters are concerned about inflation, jobs, gas at the pump, but what they don't realize is how the degrading military system affects all of those things, maybe disproportionately more than any other attribute. And so rather than just thanking a service member, real criticism and honest questions that I lay out in the book are very important for all Americans to understand. And I think probably the biggest thing affecting all other problems in the military is their promotion system. Right now, it's a subjective evaluation. So if I, as a commander, have five subordinates, I rank them 1 through 5. And what people figure out over a long enough military career is that they just have to impress their boss. They don't necessarily have to be the best performer in whatever their trade is. And so it turns into this pleasing of your superior mentality, which is why in the senior general officers, 40 years is what it takes to make a 4-star general. They've literally become conditioned to just please their boss. And so that's why following orders is so easy.
And again, There are times when following orders, even if you don't like them, is appropriate. But you've got to have the values to know, no, this is not just not what I agree with. This is wrong. This is evil. And you got to draw the line there. Do you agree?
I completely agree. I mean, the classic moral courage case study in the military taught today is called the My Lai Massacre. It's a Vietnam incident where an army platoon went in and basically killed nothing but women and children. And the case study goes that a chief warrant officer helicopter pilot stopped, saw that happening on the ground, flew down and stopped it. And so there's like moral courage. But like what's not told in that case study is that the two company grade officers were both tried and convicted, but there wasn't a senior general officer that set the tone for that op that was held accountable. And so, you know, moral courage applies more to senior leaders than it does just to subordinates. And so I just think we really need to take a hard look at the lack of courage in our senior military leaders.
Yes, sir. Stu, how can listeners get a copy of Crisis of Command? How can they buy one?
You can go on Amazon. It's the easiest way. All the stores have them. Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Target.com, Walmart.com already has it. So really, wherever you buy books, you can find it.
Stu, thank you. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for your service to our nation. Thank you for standing up for what's right and willing to pay the price. I'm proud to call you a friend, and I hope we can stay in touch.
Thanks, Dennis. Hope you bring me back on.
This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking with Chaplain Scott McChrystal about the way our military chaplains are being abused. Then we'll discuss the Battle of the Month with General Chris Petty, and we'll review last weekend's Service Academy football games. Of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it is time for jumping jacks. I want you to do 50 good ones, then grab some protein, rehydrate with water, and finally, put a big smile on your proud to be an American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.